Shockwaves and sonic folds showed faintly outlined by cloud-dimmed arch-light, a network of straight lines converging to a point. Speaker's fly cycle and speaker's ghost-gray silhouette seemed caught in a Euclidean spiderweb. Louis was perilously close when he turned his spotlight on and immediately off. In the dark, he saw the ghost come suddenly alert. Louis guided his cycle carefully between the Kazin and the point of light. He blinked his spotlight again. Speaker came on the intercom.
"Yes, Louis, I see it now. A lighted something going past us."
"Then let's look it over."
"Very well."
Speaker turned toward the light. They circled it in the dark, like curious minnows nosing a sinking beer bottle. It was a 10-story castle floating 1,000 feet high, and it was all lit up like the instrument board on some ancient rocket ship. A single tremendous picture window, curved so that it formed both wall and ceiling, opened on a cavity the size of an opera house. Within, a labyrinth of dining tables surrounded a raised circle of floor. There was 50 feet of space above the tables, empty but for a free-form sculpture in stressed wire. Always it came as a fresh surprise, the elbow room on the Ring World. On Earth, it was a felony to fly any vehicle without an autopilot. A falling car would be bound to kill someone, no matter where it fell. Here, thousands of miles of wilderness, buildings suspended over cities, and headroom for a guest 50 feet tall. There was a city beneath the castle. It showed no lights. Speaker skimmed over it like a swooping hawk, scanned it hastily in the blue arch light. He came up to report that the city looked very like Zignamuclickclick.
"We can explore it after dawn," he said. "I think this stronghold is more important. It may have been untouched since the fall of civilization."
"It must have its own power source," Louis speculated. "I wonder why. None of the buildings in Zignamuclickclick did." Tila sent her cycle skimming directly under the castle. In the intercom, her eyes went big with wonder, and she cried, "Louis, Speaker, you've got to see this." They dropped after her without thought. Louis was moving up alongside her when he became suddenly, freezingly aware of the mass suspended over his head. There were windows all over the underside, and the underside was all angles. There was no way to land the castle. Who had built it, and how, with no bottom to it? Concrete and metal, asymmetrically designed, and what the tange was holding it up? Louis's stomach lurched, but he set his jaw and pulled up alongside Tila, underneath a floating mass equivalent to a medium-sized passenger starship. Tila had found a wonder, a sunken swimming pool, bathtub-shaped and brightly lit. Its glass bottom and glass walls were open to the outer darkness, but for one wall which bordered on a bar, or a living room, or... it was hard to tell, looking through two thicknesses of transparency. The pool was dry. In the bottom was a single great skeleton resembling that of a bandersnatch. "They kept large pets," Louis speculated. "Isn't that a Jinxian bandersnatch? My uncle was a hunter," said Tila. "He had his trophy room built inside a bandersnatch skeleton."
"There are bandersnatchy in a lot of worlds.
They were slaver food animals. I wouldn't be surprised to find them all through the galaxy. The question is, what made the Ringworlders bring them here?"
"Decoration," Tila said promptly.
"Are you kidding?"
A bandersnatch looked like a cross between Moby Dick and a caterpillar tractor. Still, Louis thought, why not? Why wouldn't the engineers have raided 12 or 100 stellar systems to populate their artificial world? By hypothesis, they had ram-scoop fusion drives. By necessity, every living thing on the Ringworld had been brought from somewhere else. Sunflowers? Bandersnatchy? What else?
"Forget it. Go straight for the rim wall. Don't try to explore." Already they had come far enough to circle the Earth 6 times. Finnegal's Law. How much there was to find. Strange life. Harmless so far. Sunflowers. Speaker, flaming in a glare of light, yowling into the intercom. Floating cities, which fell disastrously. Bandersnatchy. Intelligent and dangerous. They would be the same here. Bandersnatchy did not mutate. And death? Death was always the same everywhere.
They circled the castle again, looking for openings. Windows there were, all shapes, rectangles and octagons and bubbles and thick panes in the floor. But all were closed. They found a dock for flying vehicles, with a great door built like a drawbridge to act as a landing ramp. But, like a drawbridge, the door was up and closed. They found a couple of 100 feet of spiral escalator hanging like a bedspring from the lowermost tip of the castle. Its bottom ended in open air. Some force had twisted it away, leaving sheared beams and broken treads. Its top was a locked door. "To finagle with this, I'm going to ram a window," said Teela. "Stop," Louis commanded. He believed she would do it. "Speaker, use the disintegrator. Get us in." In the light streaming from the great picture window, Speaker unslung the slaver digging tool. Louis knew about the disintegrator. Objects within its variable width beam acquired, suddenly, a positive charge powerful enough to tear them apart. The puppeteers had added a second parallel beam to suppress the charge on the proton. Louis had not used it to dig in the sunflower field, and he knew it would not be needed for this job. He might have guessed that Speaker would use it anyway. 2 points a few inches apart on the great octagonal window acquired opposite charges with a potential difference between. The flash was blinding. Louis clenched his eyes over tears and pain. The crack of thunder was simultaneous and deafening even through the sonic fold. In the stunned calm that followed, Louis felt gritty particles settled thickly over his neck and shoulders and the backs of his hands. He kept his eyes closed. "You had to test it," he said.
"It works very well. It will serve us."
"Happy birthday. Don't point it at Daddy, because Daddy will be very angry."
"Do not be flippant, Louis."
His eyes had recovered. Louis found millions of tiny glass slivers all over him and the cycle. Flying glass? The sonic fold must have stopped the particles, then released them to drift down over every horizontal surface. Teela was already floating into the ballroom-sized cavity. They followed. Louis woke, gradually, feeling wonderful. He was lying on his arm, on a soft surface. His arm was asleep. He rolled over and opened his eyes. He was in a bed, looking up at a high white ceiling. An obstruction under his ribs turned out to be Teela's foot. Right. They had found the bed last night. A bed as big as a miniature golf course, in an enormous bedroom in what would have been the basement of a less unusual castle. By then, they had already found marvels. The castle was a castle indeed, and not merely a posh hotel. A banquet hall with a picture window 50 feet tall was startling enough. But the tables circled a central ring-shaped table on a raised dais. The ring surrounded a contoured, high-backed chair the size of a throne. Teela, experimenting, had found how to make the chair rise halfway to the ceiling, and how to activate a pickup to amplify the voice of the occupant into a thunder of command. The chair would turn, and when it turned, the sculpture above it turned too. The sculpture was in stressed wire, very light, mostly empty space. It had seemed an abstraction until Teela started it turning. Then, it was obviously a portrait. The sculpted head of an entirely hairless man. Was he a native, from a community whose members shaved their faces and scalps? Or had he been a member of another race from far around the curve of the ring? They might never know, but the face was decidedly human, handsome, angular, the face of one used to command. Louis looked up at the ceiling and remembered that face. Command had worn lines into that face, around the eyes and mouth, and the artist had somehow managed to include those lines into the wire framework. This castle had been a seat of government. Everything pointed to it. The throne, the banquet hall, the unique windows, the floating castle itself with its independent power source. But for Louis Wu, the clincher was that face. Afterward, they had wandered through the castle. They had found lavishly decorated, beautifully designed staircases everywhere. But they didn't move. There were no escalators, no elevators, no slidewalks, no drop shafts. Perhaps the stairs themselves had moved once. So the party had wandered downward because it was easier than climbing up. In the bottom of the castle, they had found the bedroom.